Oh, I'm recording. I guess here we go. Welcome back to the Folk Artwork and Friends podcast. My name is Adam Ostrich. I am the man behind Folk Artwork, and I'm excited to be here today for the second episode of our new podcast. For years, I've been wanting to do a podcast, and I never really knew the best way to go about it. But after a fantastic summer of collaborating with the American Folk Art Museum in New York City, who I did a really great video series with that included deep dives into Mary Borkowski, Clementine Hunter, and Eddie Arning. Go check those out on Instagram if you haven't yet. I think I finally figured out the best way to go about this. Part history lesson, part conversation with some really great people who have really great stories. Ever since I walked into the William Hawkins exhibit in Davenport, Iowa over 7 years ago, I've met some incredible people in this wild world of outsider art. And I'm lucky enough to call many of them my friends. Once a month, I'll highlight an artist or two and share my conversation with some of my friends, gallery owners, curators, artists, and outside art enthusiasts, to talk about how they got into this field, which artists inspire them, what piece of artwork that they love, and who knows what else. I've had some really, really great conversations with some really interesting people over the past few years, and I'd like to share some of that with you all. On the first episode, I talked to Kylie Rau, the associate director at Rico Maresca Gallery in New York City. Today, on our second episode, I am delighted to sit down and talk to Alex Hunninghake, the executive director of the Outsider Art Museum and Gallery in the Portland area of Louisville, Kentucky. Like many of my friends, I have defied my parents' warning, and I met on the internet, me and Alex. We've had some really great conversations over the years. We finally got a chance to meet in person at the 2025 Outsider Art Fair earlier this year, in which the Outsider Art Museum was a cultural sponsor of, and he gifted me all kinds of great swag and this amazing, incredible hat that I wear every single day. And I didn't know it until we sat down for this conversation, but we had quite a few things in common. And I think I can go from calling him an internet friend now to a real life friend. And so I'm delighted to sit down and share my conversation with Alex, who I hope I get down to see in Louisville, visit, check out their museum and gallery soon. Here's our conversation. Just psyching myself up here. Alex, how are you doing? Thank you so much for joining me today.
Yeah, my pleasure. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I'm pretty good. You know, I just got back from Texas, which I think we've talked about, but you lived in Austin as well, right?
Yep.
And yeah, did we overlap a little bit?
I don't remember. I left there to come back here in 2023, like around this time in 2023. Okay. And I've been there for like 8 years.
Okay. So maybe just barely. We maybe bumped into each other at a food truck or something. I left in 2018 is when I left Austin.
Gotcha.
And I was down there for about 6 years or so. But I was just down last week. And that's why my forehead is like completely burned, because I forgot what the Texas sun and heat and all that jazz was like.
It's brutal.
Because the one time, and I'll start off here with a little bit of a compliment. As you noticed, I've got your hat back here in the background.
Yeah.
The best hat. I absolutely love everything about this hat. I'm a hat guy because I'm a middle-aged balding man. And so I wore it the whole time in Texas because it's fantastic. The logo, I don't know if you did that. I know you sewed the patch on, right?
I did. And I did.
Yeah. It's brilliant. Fantastic. Thank you so much. I try to like, I used to have a ton of hats, And now I want to try to stick to one. I want to be like a one hat guy. Like
Yeah.
someone sees me, they're like, there's that guy in that blue hat or that hat. And so this has
Yeah.
been my, since you gave it to me, in the outside at the outside art fair, this has been my go-to hat. So again, thank you. I really appreciate it.
That makes me very happy. You honor me.
Well, again, it's fantastic. So, speaking of, I think we've kind of like we corresponded a little bit before the Outsider Art Fair, and as
Yeah.
we were just reminiscing, that seems like almost a year or two ago, but that was just about 6 months ago when we met at the
Yeah.
Outsider Art Fair, and I couldn't remember. Was that your first time ever there?
Yeah, it was. Yeah.
Yeah. So, what are some like things that you've taken away from there? Or because I remember my first time going and just being like a kid in a candy shop, and it just being for people like us, it's just like the greatest place
Oh,
on
yeah.
earth. And I'm wondering if there were like any artists or artworks that have stuck with you since that time.
Yeah, I mean, I had that kid in a candy shop feeling as well. And I mean, when you walk in the Vernissage, like that first night before it is officially open, it's like, whoa, it's like so overwhelming. And
Yeah.
it's like it struck me that these are like all the people that have booths, like this is like these are the premier people that represent this type of art. And like it actually, I mean, it was a huge space and a huge event, but like it's a relatively small world, I think,
Sure.
is what I realized. Because like the heavyweights of that world, the artist are both artists and like collectors and curators and galleries were there. So it was
Yeah.
like, wow, that was really striking. But yeah, I think that I was kind of thinking about that and like which artists really stood out to me, and I was going back, and almost all of them were living artists who are living and working today and who are younger than 50, which
Yeah.
is I don't know, I feel like it, I was surprised by that. I was surprised by how many contemporary artists were shown, and there were tons of them that I had never heard of. But like, not to just gas you up, but I think that I had come across your Instagram account like years ago, and then separately, I think, started following Esteban, and his pieces were like among my favorites in the whole show. And like I just love, I mean, I don't know, I guess you can make a case for like all art is political in some
Sure.
way,
Right,
but
right.
like in terms of like an overt political viewpoint, his stuff is right out there in your face, and it's so different than everything else you see.
Totally.
So I just loved his stuff, and it was awesome to meet him. Yeah. So he was one. I don't know if you caught Jake Pliskin was another one I really liked.
Yeah.
He does
I got a
those.
chance to meet him. That
Okay.
was the only bummer about having a booth this year. It was fantastic and great. I didn't get around to see as much as I would have liked in years past, but I
Yeah.
did. I had known him. He shows at the Court Tree Collective in Brooklyn, and I did get a chance. He introduced himself to me, and I love his work. It's great.
I just fell in love with those helmet pieces.
Yeah.
They're just so cool. I mean, it's they speak to me on like a personal level too, because I'm really into cars, and my dad used to race cars, and so I love like oil company logos and
Yep.
stuff like that. So yeah, those were really awesome. Really liked him. Esteban, and then also to kind of gas you up or connect it back to you, you just did the show with Sage,
Yeah.
and I regret I never I don't think I was even really aware of Sage when I was living in Austin, so I never went there. So and I always felt like the Austin art world was I never really got a real read on it. So that was part of the reason why, but I really like those Montrell Beverly pipe cleaner
Yeah. He
pieces. Yeah.
is the nicest, most talented. I mean, I think, again, about the Outsider Art Fair, meeting you there, you're so nice and kind, and your partner as well. But like everybody there is just like this world, I feel like is for nice people and great, kind, good people, hardworking people that obviously have had struggles here or there, but like everyone you meet, including Montreal Esteban, like, and Jake Pliskin, the three that you mentioned, like some of the nicest guys. This is not the podcast to like dissect Austin, Texas's art scene and the vibe there, but I did just get back from there. And like you mentioned, I did not know about Sage either when I actually lived in Texas. It wasn't until going to the Outsider Art Fair where I met Katie and Lucy, and back to again, nice people. They were just some of the kindest people to me as a fan, a guy who just like loved all this artwork. So yeah, I it's weird because they are, I think when you were there, they were kind of just getting their footing and just getting off the ground. And it really, I think they even, I think Lucy was mentioning the past 4 years or so that they've really sort of hit the ground running. And it Montrell's work, like again, if no one's ever seen Montrell's work, like it's just amazing. The stuff that he does, it's quite incredible.
I just came across on Instagram, as you know, everything's on Instagram
As we
now,
do,
but
yeah.
I don't know if it was part of the sorry, was your show title All the Folks or something like that?
Yeah, all these
All
folks.
These
Yeah.
Folks. Okay.
Yeah.
Was the I just saw that he just did a piece of David Hockney's swimmer, or I
Yeah.
don't the pool. I don't remember the name of the
Yeah, I
piece,
think it
but
was the pool. Yes, he is doing so. His sort of story is incredible, and just the things that he's done. He started like small with like little toys, and then now he's doing these like multi-layered portraits of famous artworks. Like at the Outsider Art Fair, he did The Last Supper. He did
yeah.
a couple other ones. I can't the Milo de Venis, or the Birth of Venus, and he is now doing these like incredibly multi-layered that, as like an artist, you it'd be very easy just to like kind of put things flat, but he is with the pipe cleaner like making these layers and adding details, the things that get covered up by other layers. And yeah, it's really incredible. He is going to be a part of a show out in LA in January, I believe. So he's doing that for those. I got a chance to see a couple, and he's got many, many more that he's working on. He's yeah, he's super, super talented. But it's fascinating that you mentioned sort of these contemporary artists, because I was doing a little digging last night, which is a little why I'm exhausted and my face looks like this. The other reason is because I got back from the dentist and like half of my face is numb. But I feel pretty good. It's just in case I'm like drooping at all. But I always am curious about how people, like you said, the outside art world, it is fairly small. And I'm always curious about how like people find out about this world. But I did some digging, and you kind of have like always known about this world. Is that right? Or like folk art? So can you kind of tell me a little bit about growing up with this artwork around you?
Well, I mean, I grew up here in Louisville, Kentucky, and lived here most of my life until I moved to Austin. But Kentucky is just, and Appalachia, regionally, generally, is just like a hotbed of folk art. And I'm
Yeah.
just like, we're just awash in like these amazing artists. And it was cool to see a lot of Kentucky art at the Outsider Fair. And so I feel like it's something that in my adult life I've really kind of been like, oh, I need to like ride for this. I need to represent this.
Sure. Yeah.
Where when you're a kid, you're like, the world is what it, you don't appreciate things.
Yes.
But yeah, I grew up, my mom, I really owe it all to my mom. She was, has just been a lifelong lover and collector of folk art. I think part, I come from a family of all creative people. Both my parents, they used to have a graphic design firm, back when design was, physical, like typesetting and all that stuff. And then my brother and I both, do design and whatnot. But so we always, we've always had a lot of art in our home. And my mom, I think, kind of by nature of just like, this art is affordable. This type of art is affordable. So, my mom could afford to buy enough pieces to fill a wall, So we always had folk art in the house growing up, and there used to be a festival in Louisville called the Good Folk Fest. And I don't know when they stopped doing it. I don't think it was a COVID thing. I think it was like before COVID, it stopped happening. But that was sort of a chance for artists in Kentucky and in the South or the Midwest to come into Louisville and show their work. So I remember going there several times, and that's where I bought my first piece of art, which I dug out, which is
Oh,
this,
nice.
which is a piece by a guy called C.M. Laster, who is from Kentucky, from a town called, I think it's called Lickskillet.
Perfect. Yeah, right. I feel like most of the names when you're driving between like Iowa and like Appalachia, you got to get a lot of those like names that just like that. Just pick two random objects and throw them together.
But
Shout out to
yeah,
What Cheer Iowa. Sorry. That's our big one around here. But yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
But so this is 2005. I think I paid $10 for it of my own money, and so like he has it all kind of written on the back, but
Perfect.
it's a piece called Weather Bombs, and it says, "God, please heal us, amen. Vision for now, 2005." So I think that at the time there was like a conspiracy theory, which has come back around as they
Full
do,
circle,
that the government is controlling the weather or something. So he's kind of like making fun of that with this piece. But anyway, that's I think the first piece of folk art I ever bought, and I just loved it. And I think that like my love of that sort of meshed or evolved into like, I started really enjoying like street art and graffiti and stuff, which is kind of another form of outsider art if you think about it.
Totally. Yeah.
But so yeah, that was like the early days of my appreciation and enjoyment of it. And then then I went to I was in art classes in high school, and then I went to the University of Louisville for art, and I got a BFA in printmaking and drawing. And I think like after that, this is not an original or unique experience of going to art school, but I was just like really disenchanted with what I saw as like the fine art world. Just like just started to feel like I don't just sort of like allergic to that world. Like I don't, it feels icky, like the large sums of money and the hype, like the injection of whatever money and interest and fame and all that stuff, like didn't appeal to me, nor did like the academic kind of thinking about art. So I kind of like went through a period of time where I felt like I was sort of losing interest in art. But I was still making stuff and painting and whatnot. But then in Austin, sorry, I'm getting like
No, you're
all the
good.
details of it.
Yeah, no.
But then so yeah, I moved to Austin, and then I was doing, I had like dozens of different odd jobs, but I started art handling in Austin, and so I was exposed to like, I would be handling like, $1.3 million Damien Hirst paintings and stuff, and so that again just kind of bolstered the ickiness of that. But
Well,
so yeah.
and Austin though is such a it sounds like we almost kind of had similar experiences, right? Where it's like I want to go, I'm kind of disenchanted, and Austin is such a great place to just sort of like kick you in the face with everything, right? You get these like Damien Hirst pieces, but then you're also, buying art from a guy at a coffee shop who's just like goes there every day, and you just see everything, music, street art, all kinds of just creative, like it used to be, the place where like creative people would flock to.
Yeah.
And then you just had that. So did that then, did Austin sort of rekindle that for you, or like sharpen? I need to be like, and again, it's a place for like outsiders, right? Like it used to be the place for outsiders where we would go to try to make a name for ourselves in this weird, different sort of creative way.
Yeah. Like I was saying earlier, like I never really felt like I understood the art scene, the visual art scene. I don't know if it, I think in a way it pushed me further into like this position of like disinterest of the art that I was interacting with. But,
oh, sure.
But by the same, you know, the same coin, like I feel like it's such a, it can, at its best, it can be like a really open environment for people who just want to do things. And so I did go to like some DIY shows that were really inspiring. And, and I was in bands and so like, you know, we would be, I think the musical aspect of that kind of like self-starting, self-taught thing that applied to me more than the art side did. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I think in a way, and this is kind of, you know, transitioning into like my move back here, I never wanted to come back to Louisville, and not because Louisville isn't amazing. It is I love it here. It's just that thing of like going back to your hometown, and they call it the boomerang effect here, where like people go to New York or something for, you know, 5-10 years, and then they come back and tail tucked between their legs like they didn't.
I was gonna say, and look, I did the exact same thing, and I think there is that sort of and even just being back in Austin, you kind of have that like, oh, I couldn't hack it here, right? Yeah. And this is not true, but you kind of feel like, oh man, things didn't work out for me. I didn't do X, Y, or Z, whatever. Now I'm back home. But on the other hand, like you are the executive director of the Outsider Art Museum and Gallery. And this is like a really amazing thing. When I first heard about this, I'm like, holy cow, this is brilliant. So you get back to Louisville. Last time I was in Louisville, I went to McDonald's and the lady was like, "Welcome to the Ville, baby." So I'll never forget that about Louisville. But when you get back to the Ville, when you get back to Louisville, this sort of comes together. And how all did this come together? How did the Outsider Art Museum and Gallery manifest for you?
Yeah. Well, so that, you know, that goes to my mom. We've like worked together over the years on various design projects and stuff, but so she had befriended this folk artist couple in Eastern Kentucky named Lonnie and Twyla Money. They're quite famous like regionally. I mean, they sell stuff to people in Europe, and they have a really amazing, efficient operation going there, and they're just like the best people that you'll ever meet. Like they're just genuine, hardworking, funny, welcoming, like all the best things. So she had sort of struck up this friendship with them, and Lonnie, the husband of the husband-wife duo, who's the wood carving part of it, he had gotten really sick with some mysterious thing, and long story short, it turned out to be Lyme disease. But there was a period of like maybe a month where they couldn't figure out what was going on with him. He thought he was going to die. And so my mom, you know, in that time period was like asking them like, well, what's going to happen if, because they couldn't have children. And they have some family. I think Lonnie has a sister, but they don't have like progeny to, you know, take up the mantle of this business or whatever.
Yeah.
And so my mom asked like, you know, what's going to happen to this? And Lonnie just said like sullenly, like, it's just going to go to the garbage. Yeah. And so like, my mom just like could not abide that. she started thinking about that and started like jotting down some of their stories, and decided that she would just start like writing a book, which she's never done before.
Whoa, yeah.
But she has that design background, so she knows how to lay things out and on pages. And so she started doing that, and then she needed some help with some photo editing and stuff. So she brought me in to do that. And then through that and like talking to, the person that published that book, there was like an opportunity to move into this space where I am now, which is a new building in the Portland neighborhood of Louisville. And we just started thinking about like, well, there's really no, like I mentioned, KMAC, they don't really show a lot of folk art anymore, and there's really not a place in Louisville for like dedicated to folk art and outsider art specifically. And so I just started thinking about like, well, what if I could come back to Louisville and like start a museum, and so I just started thinking about that. And then over the course of the following few months, my rent went up in Austin, and like
Yeah.
it turned to summer, and it was so hot, and I was just like,
Yeah.
Louisville sounds pretty good actually.
Yeah, right.
And yeah, just like I was kind of alluding to, like getting beat down by the feeling of like, oh, I'm never gonna make it here. Like I'm not gonna be able to be successful, and I don't know the right people to like make it in the art world, or I just didn't really see much of a future. So it started to be attractive, the idea of like coming back to a place where I actually know people, and it has been like that. Like I feel
Yeah.
like in Louisville, if you have an idea, like a creative idea, you're only ever like two people away from meeting the person that's going to help you do it.
For sure, yeah.
And people are excited about that here. It just is like a lot, things feel a lot more possible here. So yeah, that's a kind of long-winded way of explaining that. So yeah, it started with that book and meeting the monies and deciding like, oh, I should represent this type of artwork. Yeah.
And we got to give a shout out to moms. This is the second interview I've done now where like moms have played like a critical role in sort of like a development of young people like you and making sort of this thing happen that again is a brilliant thing. So, you were talking too about like clearly your mom had a passion for this and the storytelling and you've got a passion. Love, I can feel that from you. And I had a couple friends that were down in Louisville. Again, it might have been this year, last year, who knows with time, but they told me just how excited you were to tell them about the art that you had at your booth or wherever you were. And just telling about all the artists and the artworks and everything. And they were really impressed, and excited to learn so much. So what is it about the stories of outsider artists? I know you were a bit of a musician, writer, and sort of that's the goal, I think, of Outsider Art Museum and Gallery is to share these stories. But like, what is it about the stories of these people, these artists? And I want to get to one in a second in particular, and maybe we can get into that with your answer here. But Mark, like someone like Mark Anthony Mulligan, like what is it about these people and these stories that you enjoy like telling and sharing so much?
I think, I mean, like kind of to go back to kind of my feelings about art and the art world, like post graduating from college, like I think what is so attractive to me about folk art and outsider art and self-taught art in general is like it's not pretentious. And its goal is not to earn money for, I mean, its goal is certainly to earn money for the artist, but like
Yeah.
it's not like an incubator for like billionaires' wealth or whatever. Like it's just
Right,
never
right,
going to
right.
be that. It's never going to be
Yes.
that. It's common people that have an idea, and there's just like a purity and flow of expression. And it's, to me, it's like the most pure form of creating something. It's
Yeah.
not, it's just simply that the artist has to do it. They have to get this idea out. They have to create this thing. And there's a rich tradition of that here in Kentucky. But I think that's like the most attractive part of it to me is that it's just honest, genuine. You can't fake it. And it's unique, and it's a lot of it is not like referential to the art world, or I mean it can be in fun ways, like we were talking about Montrell, like sort of referencing these great art pieces and stuff, but in general it's like it doesn't it sort of eschews all of the like the proper ways of doing stuff, of making art and like composition and color mixing and stuff. It's more immediate. It's like, how can I get this idea in my head out? And there's just something about that that's so like delightful, and you can't I don't know, it's so specific to this type of art, I guess. I would almost call it non-commercial, but then I hazard to do that because I think like it, the monies, they make a living doing this, and that
Yes,
this is
right,
their
sure.
work, and it's no joke, you know. But yeah, I guess that's kind of a way of explaining it. It's just there's just something pure about it that is so unlike stuff that you would see in like a high-end gallery in New York or something.
And even like at the outset of art fair, right? Like I'm sure in some of the contemporary artists were thrilled and excited and glad to be there. But even if you were to take that away, like they're still doing it, right? Like they're still making, they're still, and I've been trying to like think more and more about this and not sound like a complete idiot, you know, but like everybody has ideas and then everybody does have access to materials to make. Well, not everybody, but you know, people we do, but some of these people are so they don't have that access or they don't have that ability, but they still like dig deep, deep down, and like they have this impulse that they have to like get this art out, right? And that again, kind of like your first exhibit, and I believe this is how I first learned about you. Was it 2023 when you all opened? And I was just Googling and was like, oh yeah, of course. There needs to be an outside art museum and gallery. This is perfect. And in Louisville, this is amazing. And the first exhibit you had was Mark Anthony Mulligan. I just watched the documentary Peaceland, I believe it's called, on him, and seems like just one of the most incredible humans in the world. Can you tell me a little bit about him and why it was so important for you and the museum and gallery to sort of open your beautiful space with an exhibit featuring his artwork?
I mean, I think it was kind of fortunate that it just felt like it came together, and I wasn't really thinking about it in this way at first, but like his work and his story is really like indicative of, or like is a very, you know, perfect example of what like outsider art is, or what it means to me anyway. Someone who just had that, like we were saying, that sort of like purity of expression, just immediate creation, super prolific. But I mean, it made sense as well for a number of other reasons. One, it was like I think it was the 2 year anniversary of his passing when we had that show. So it felt like it made sense in that way. And there really hadn't been, since his funeral, there really hadn't been like an opportunity for people that knew him here to like come gather, and certainly not to come like look at his art kind of context. So it was good in that way. And then also, I mean, he's arguably like Louisville's most famous artist, or at least those of us who care about outsider art and folk art.
Well, and maybe even just like one, it seemed like one of the most famous people too. Like you, because he was just like everywhere and everybody knew him. And if he was sitting on the bus stop, people would honk and he'd wave, or you could go up and he'd tell you a story or something. So, yeah, like most famous artist in person in Louisville.
I mean, my relationship with him, unfortunately, I believe I talked to him a couple times on the street, but it wasn't until, I think it wasn't until I moved away, or maybe it was into my time at college, where I realized that he was an art maker. Like, I didn't know that. I knew his personality.
Yeah.
I saw him everywhere. I went, there's a popular stretch of road in Louisville called Bardstown Road, which actually goes all, it's called that because it goes all the way to Bardstown, Kentucky. It's like, a little happening stretch of, about 3 miles where there's tons of shops and coffee shops and restaurants and stuff. And I grew up going to Catholic school there on Bardstown Road, and he would always be on the bus stop. There was a bus stop like right outside the school, and I would always see him. And just, I think like one of the guys interviewed in the documentary describes him as like a real life cartoon character, which
Yeah.
I think is like very, very accurate. Like he was
Yeah.
just kind of larger than life. Just, and so so unique and unusual. And, but yeah, just the kindest person. And yeah, he definitely had his share of struggles. I think he sort of, I mean, he struggled with mental illness all throughout his life, in various forms. And yeah, I got to, through putting the show together, I got to know a lot more about him, and I, established a kind of relationship with his two living sisters. I think one living brother, but one sister lives in Indiana, and so I kind of made sure to get her blessing about having the show, and got to, learn a lot more about his early life and stuff. So he sort of like left his home and started kind of camping out when he was a teenager. And yeah, he would kind of be in and out of there's a place called the Home of the Innocents here, which is a shelter that homeless people can stay at. But he had a lot of like guardian angels, like people that knew him and bought art from him and helped, buy him lunch. And at various times he had a studio that somebody had, put up the money for. And he had an apartment, I know, at one point in time. And in some ways it was good, in some ways I think that was a huge struggle for him. But yeah, he just, yeah,
But
he was just the
despite it
spirit.
all, it seemed like someone who just, again, just loved life. Like
Yeah.
he just, again, just the short video and then seeing the work, which again, the exhibit that you all did, it seemed incredible. It looked beautiful. And I feel like you hopefully felt like you did a great job honoring him and his life and his legacy. So,
Yeah.
what I love, like my favorite thing is, I've been doing this for a while now. I feel like I know everybody or every artist, right? Which I don't. And so when I get to meet and introduce to new artists like Mark Anthony Mulligan, thanks to someone like you, I would never have known about it. Like that brings me so much joy. So,
Yeah.
awesome. Well, Alex, I can't thank you enough. And again, from top to bottom, the branding, the hat, the space, like everything what you're doing is so fantastic. So keep up the good fight. And
Thank you,
again,
brother.
I really appreciate you joining me here today.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been my pleasure, man. Yeah.
There are a little over 200 calendar days between the beginning of March and the end of September. Plenty of time to start and stop a hobby, begin a new diet, and then eat McDonald's 5 days in a row. That wasn't me. Start working out and get hurt and then stop. That was me. And make plenty of excuses as to why you can't make any artwork at all. Unless you're Minnie Adkins. During the beginning of the pandemic in March of 2020, Minnie Adkins had whittled 182 pieces from March till September. Which, if you're keeping track at home and you're good at math, like my 8-year-old son, that's basically a wood carving a day. As she told NPR in an interview with Sherry Lawson, after that, she had done 62 paintings. During this time, Minnie was 86 years old. Minnie Adkins is a Kentucky folk artist known for her painted wood carvings of animals, roosters, red foxes, bears, possums, horses, whatever this is. She was born in 1934 in Ionsville, a small town in rural eastern Kentucky, to a working class family, low on income, but full of pride. While a young child, she was attracted to whittling wooden sticks. Minnie was just 6 years old when she began carving using a pocket knife loaned to her by her uncle until her father found out and reluctantly gave her one of her own. At first, it wasn't about a career or making money. Minnie quoted as saying, "I didn't know anything about art, but I did make slingshots and pop guns, bows and arrows, and other things because we didn't have a lot to play with." She soon took up a hobby that, as I read multiple times while researching Minnie, everyone kept saying wasn't a hobby for girls. More of a hobby for young boys and men. I guess one would want me to think of Elijah Pierce instead. Similar story. Another famous folk artist, a couple hundred miles away, a couple years older. Elijah Pierce, a black man from Mississippi living in Ohio, probably wasn't supposed to become a famous artist either. But he also got handed a pocket knife as a young child and would go on to become one of the most prominent and important folk artists of the 20th century. Give your children pocket knives? Elijah Pierce is a story for another day. Let's get back to Minnie. Minnie Atkins kept whittling. She quit school after the ninth grade as she was expected to help with the farm work, including growing tobacco. Instead, she married at age 18. And a few years after that, in 1968, Atkins and her husband Garland and their son moved like many families out of Appalachia to Ohio in search of jobs. According to Raw Vision magazine, to help bring in money, Atkins began carving wooden roosters to sell. She would hunt the nearby woods for the right kind of sticks, often maple tree twigs and branches, and sometimes she would pay her young son, Mike, a small amount to gather them for her. Her work continued to evolve, and carved animals would sell at local outdoor markets for around $32. Returning to Kentucky in 1983, she began selling her carvings at a craft gallery in Moorhead, Kentucky, where it was then noticed by folk art dealer Larry Hackley, who introduced her artwork to collectors and galleries outside of Kentucky. While her neighbors would make fun of her biblical characters, whimsical animals, and whatever this is, they kept telling her she needed to go take art lessons, but Minnie persisted. And in 1985, several of her works were included in the collection of the Kentucky Folk Art Center, and are now in many public and private collections like the Smithsonian, as well as the American and International Folk Art Museums. Today, Minnie Atkins is 91 years old and still making art. She now enjoys renown as a carver throughout a region rich in the wood carving tradition. If you're driving through eastern Kentucky and there's a nice breeze outside, you may catch Minnie sitting on her front porch carving one of her iconic figures. If not, she'll sit inside on her recliner in her living room with a towel on her lap to catch the shavings from the wood as she whittles. Her work will surely put a smile on your face. Her story, hopefully, will as well. And her artwork won't break your bank if you're looking to start your collection, just like me and my children a few years ago when we decided we needed a piece by Minnie Atkins, and it needed to be this purple, polka-dotted Terminator that now sits on the shelf in my four-year-old's room, as it was one of his top picks when he got to choose all of the artwork that he wanted to be in his room. You too can purchase artwork from Minnie Atkins at a few places if you're interested, including but not limited to Possum County Folk Art and Collectibles. And if you're ever driving through eastern Kentucky on a beautiful breezy day, keep your eyes out for the 91-year-old folk artist Minnie Atkins, who might just be on her front porch whittling her latest and greatest wood-carved animal. And thank you so much for being here. And thank you to Alex for joining me and for doing really great work down there in Louisville. If you aren't yet, please do follow the Outset Art Museum and Gallery on Instagram. It's at Outsider Art KY. And if you're in the area, they currently have a really amazing looking show up that is dedicated to contemporary black art in Louisville that spans multiple generations, titled Melanated Messages. This show includes, but is not limited to, the artwork of Mr. Thomas English, aka the Paint Man, who grew up in Louisville's West End and was trained in sign painting by, get this, Muhammad Ali's father, Cassius Clay Sr. He now primarily is a mural artist. Paint Man has painted subjects that include important figures from black history, boxing, and social justice movements. Locally, he's probably best known for a massive mural titled Take a Knee, which was painted in the wake of the controversy surrounding NFL player Colin Kaepernick's righteous act of protest. Go see that show. And now more than ever, please support really great, powerful artwork by people doing some really great things. Also, our show, all of these folks, just closed a week or two ago in Austin, Texas at Sage Studio and Gallery. I can't thank them enough for having me. And a huge thanks to everyone who came out down to that show. Stay tuned for more fun things currently in the works here with folk artwork and the artists that we share. We'll be announcing hopefully some more fun things soon, including new artists added to the Folk Artwork Collective, new shows coming, and new artwork available for purchase. Lastly, if you have not had a chance and you're in the New York area, go see Sarah Teresa Lee's debut show with Rico Maresca Gallery that opened alongside the insanely magnificent, I don't know the words to even describe it, Morris Hirschfeld show. That was just really amazing, incredible to see side by side Sarah's work with Morris Hirschfeld, whose work does not get shown enough. And if you don't know his story, look it up or stay tuned for maybe more coming from this podcast here. Go see that. And thank you. I was thrilled to be there in person. Thanks to my wife for letting me go and staying here and hanging out with my children, our children. But I was delighted to be there in person, spend time with Sarah, her family, and all the people at Rico Maresca Gallery and everybody who came to support Sarah and her work, who traveled from afar, great distances, just like me, to support Sarah. So thank you. Go see that show. You will not be disappointed. And thank you again to everybody who listened to the first episode of Folk Artwork and Friends for the great feedback. I do appreciate that. And for coming back for more. If this is your first time, go back and listen to that first episode. I really, truly appreciate all the love and support. It means the world to me. If you can, please like, subscribe, leave a review. That helps us become podcasting giants, just like all those other podcasting giants. But hopefully we'll be better because we aren't terrible like some of them. Not all of them, some of them. But please like, subscribe, and don't forget to follow Folk Artwork on Instagram. Subscribe to the newsletter on Substack. Shop self-taught contemporary artwork from self-taught artists around the globe at folkartwork.art, and keep this little guy's dreams growing. I do, again, really appreciate you all. Love you. Bye. And thank you to Jason Brown for the Folk Artwork and Friends theme song and all the interstitials. So many great little ditties that he put together for me. I can't thank him enough. Go check out more original music from Jason at sapwood.bandcamp.com. Buy an album. Support folk musicians like Jason. Thank you again, friend. Can't thank you enough. You are the best.